Welcome to Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. This week, the dulcet tones of comedian, competition winner, and Australian person, Nick Ellery. Welcome to the show that is now known worldwide for its incredible theme tune. I'm Ollie Bettesworth, and I'm sorry that the episode is a day late, but for those of you who were annoyed, just bear in mind it's because I started a new job this week in a hospice. So you have to really ask yourself, what's more important, guys? The promptness of your favourite podcast or care for the elderly? You know, just reach deep down and see which one's the most important. This week I have the marvellous Nick Ellery. He is a great comedian. He won the Max Turner competition recently, and damn it, he's just a good pal. We talked about his loves and hates, and to be honest, I gave him quite a rough time about his choices and really made him sort of work for it. But bear in mind, the ones I love are the ones that I bully the most. So I hope you enjoy episode 8 of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme, in which Nick Ellery came round to discuss passive aggression, personal space, and pretty ladies. Enjoy. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to lure rival comedians into my kitchen under the pretense of recording a podcast about love and hates, whereas actually what I'm trying to do is sort of expose you for being somehow bigoted or somehow sort of a dodgy Justin Collins-esque character, so that I can systematically discredit every other comedian on the circuit and be the only one left standing.
I'm a little offended that you would consider me to be a rival.
Because you feel like you're way above
it. I've moved on.
Well, that is actually true. You do joke, but I've hardly gigged in the last kind of year and a half, and that is one of the upshots of that.
Yeah,
is that,
well,
people that were way, but I mean, like you know, ants underneath my feet at one point, are suddenly now.
I've become a real road hog. I'm just touring constantly, doing like Stockwell, Angel,
all the big towns.
Streatham. I did Streatham.
What's it like gigging in Streatham?
Streatham was...
I've heard amazing things. I mean, it's like a real party town.
It was a bit stabby.
A little bit rapey even. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Depends how risque you want to go in your
set. Yeah, in all seriousness, actually, Streatham was fantastic. I've done two gigs in Streatham in the last sort of 6 months, and they're both really nice, and in one of them, I mentioned Catford. I sort of said, you know, oh, do you guys know Catford? And they were all like, ooh, ooh. I was like, oh, so for the people in Streatham, Catford is like the dodgy place to reference.
Well, that's the thing, is that in Britain, there's only very few places that you couldn't list. Yeah, I understand there's crimes going on, but there's also podcasts going on. So if you could keep that down. Thank you. There are many places in Britain that you couldn't name and attach a sort of it's a shithole, it's full of teen pregnancy and stabbings and drug abuse type routine onto it. I mean, what are the... Hampstead Heath, you couldn't quite... That you've got to just talk about gays, but you can't say that's a shithole because...
Oh, it's a very lovely area.
Unless you're doing a kind of alt room and they're all very into what the kind of usual... process is for that kind of material, and you're ironically counterpointing it.
Yeah, I would not do that.
But you're a competition winner now.
Yes.
Officially.
Yes.
One of the elites now.
Yeah, best of the best.
How did you feel upon winning the Max Turner Comedian of the Year award?
I felt really good. I felt really good, although at the time, when they actually called my name out, I was pretty much in disbelief because I didn't think that would happen. This is ridiculous, but I'm actually talking about it now. I still feel slightly thrilled. I still get the, seriously,
a little tingle about it.
I genuinely do. Great. And well, I don't want to. I don't want to diminish comedy virgins at the Cavendish Arms, the people who put the night on, or the night in general, because I'm, you know, I go there a lot still, and I've enjoyed it a lot. But for something to win an open mic competition in a South London pub and have it mean so much to me makes me think that maybe I'm lacking somewhere else in my life.
Oh, well, there's no doubt about that. We're all lacking somewhere. I mean, but it is the thing about a competition is it is a definitive thing. It's a kind of, in terms of acceptance and validation, it's a concrete...
Yeah.
Regardless of how you might think yourself out of it, it's a small pub, etc. It's at least a thing you can write down.
Mm.
And aside from anything else, it helps you get gigs, presumably.
It does help get gigs.
You felt that?
Yep, absolutely. There have been... I've had people respond to emails now that they didn't before. And I think it's just that... It's that little bit of cachet. Mm. Where, well, he won a competition, so if nothing else, he's probably got a solid five.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Got 150 quid too.
Well, yeah.
So I bought a juicer.
Did you?
I bought a juicer, yeah.
And that was you holding out for the juicer until, was that sort of or something you always wanted?
I was going to buy the juicer the next day anyway. I'd planned it.
Oh,
and then
okay.
I won the competition.
And you thought, I'm really buying that juicer.
Yeah, I thought, you know what, I'm going 800 watts.
Yeah.
You
got a more advanced juicer, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think I'm going to juice my way to comedy supremacy. Because they want you to use the money to, you know, continue.
Trying to unpack that sentence. What the intention was.
Yeah, they want you to, you know, the 150 quid is to encourage you and for you to use to further your comedy career. So, yeah, all that kale and carrot
and all that vitamin C.
Yeah, it's gonna make me funnier.
It's going to help your attention span at all the open mics that you need to sit through and keep focused.
It'll offset the poor nutrition you have to...
withstand. Is it a juicer? Because my problem with... I got a juicer once. I've got a juicer in that cupboard right there.
Right.
Then I used it once and I realised I couldn't put whole fruits. I had to chop the fruits up for a start.
You've got to chop them in half, surely, that's all.
No. The hole was quite small.
Right.
It only took... the sort of juicer I'd be interested in is where you just chuck in the contents of your fruit cupboard and then it all comes out in a muck and you go, oh, that's my fruit for a week and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well,
prep-wise, for you to make a fresh... How long from having the glass of fresh juice, how much work goes into it? And then the maintenance and the cleaning as well?
It's a pretty powerful juicer. Have you seen Fargo?
I have.
You know that scene with the wood chipper?
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's like.
You've been feeding people into this thing.
Well, yeah. They're juicy.
They are juicy. Full of protein.
Yeah. I don't want to go into the juice stuff too deeply, but from...
I think this is what people want to know. If you mention the juicer, everyone in the audience is going to be like, if we just skipped over it, they'd be like, excuse me, you talked about a juicer and now there's... You know, what?
It's an investment everyone's on the verge of making quite often.
Yeah, so we need some insider tips about the model. What model have you gone for, Jesus?
Oh, I've gone for a Philips. I think it's a Philips Z800 or something like that.
Have you just made up that number?
Yes.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that you're finding nourishment and that your comedy career has helped you maintain a healthy lifestyle. It's not something you hear often. So I should mention how we sort of first got to know each other, because it's quite a sweet / demoralising story. You played the part. And the thing is, no matter how many competition wins you get and how much you outgrow me as a comedian and how far you soar away from me, I still know you as Farty Pants. In the production of The Wicked Witch of Brighton.
No, it was called You and Me and the Witch Makes Three.
I think that was the original title.
That was in the Fringe. That was in the Fringe program.
Oh, I stand corrected. You and Me, the Witch Makes Three.
Yes.
So care to explain?
Okay. At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2012. So Janet Bettisworth, Ollie Bettisworth's Mother.
Did you just call her Sir Janet Bettesworth?
No, I said Sir.
Sir, oh, okay.
Sir Janet Bettesworth was putting on a delightful production. And she wrote a children's play called You, Me and the Witch Makes Three, which featured myself. No, sorry, it featured Ollie and Jade Adams, and they needed one other cast member who could play an instrument. And Janet posted this on a Facebook forum, and I said, I can do that. Mm-hmm. I was going up to Edinburgh anyway, and I thought, well, any extra stage time, whether it be for a kids' program, a kids' show, or anything like that, anything is good. Anything where you're performing, it's got to be good.
Mm.
It's going to be interesting and teach you things about yourself. Absolutely. And
so what did you learn?
Never do a children's show again. It was a pretty undignified role. The role of Farty Pants was...
I mean, it's the role that a lot of people, a lot of actors, I mean, cut their teeth on Farty Pants.
Yeah, it's a classic.
So
it's
I feel like you're quite lucky to have it, really, as a sort of almost first-time actor, really.
Yeah, well, it's a great traditional role. Yeah. You know, it's part of the Commedia del Farte tradition.
Have you seen Pacino's Farty Pants?
I have not seen Pacino's Farty Pants.
It's one for the ages.
Oh boy.
Okay, so moving on to your choices. What's the first one?
Passive aggression and other manipulative speech tactics.
And this is something that you love?
This is something I hate.
Okay, right.
I may employ it myself, but I do hate it. So it frustrates me that we can't just say exactly what we want and think.
Mm-hmm.
So even in simple things like, if I wanted you to email me something,
mm-hmm.
I would have to couch that in terms like, oh, if you could do this, that would be really super. Or that would be really benevolent if you were to email that stuff to me.
Yeah.
Rather than just saying, please email me the stuff.
Do you feel that way? I feel as though if you emailed me saying, could you please email me that stuff, wouldn't be the rudest thing that has ever happened.
But even could you please?
What's
could you
that?
Please? You just please email me the stuff.
It seems to me that what really you find super obnoxious is people being polite and kind.
No. I think a lot of this stuff stems from the manipulative speech tactics. It stems from things like Dale Carnegie. Mm-hmm. Dale Carnegie and those American personal development champions. Right. Well, hey, if you phrase it this way, then you know you get what you want, and they think you're a nice guy, and everyone's a winner.
Yeah. Sort of interpersonal skills is what you dislike in people.
Well, yes, because anyone can learn interpersonal skills,
mm-hmm.
in inverted commas, and they can still be a dick, but they just have the edges rounded off. They conceal their true wishes and their intent through politesse. You know, okay. So by phrasing something like, oh, you know, right now I would really like this, or... So in the way people try and draw attention to themselves or try and get compliments out of you, or try to
see that sounds
control
like
control your behaviour through the way they express their needs.
So you understand what you say in that last bit, but so far the examples that you've given all seem to be examples of people just trying to phrase things in a nice way and being like, I know that you're probably busy, I understand I don't really have any authority over you or any reason to demand this,
mm-hmm.
so you know, I'm going to say it in this kind of slightly submissive way to let those people know that they still have a choice. I mean, the word please...
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the word please.
But it is kind of a useless word. Because quite often, especially... Say, maybe not towards equals, but if I'm at a bar and I say, can I have a Corona, please? The please there stands for if you please, or if it pleases you. I'm going to be honest, I couldn't give a shit whether it pleases the barman to get me a Corona or not. Mm-hmm. They might be thinking, fucking Corona, do you want a fucking lime in that, you ponce? Mm. But I don't mind. And it's kind of, if they then said, well, it doesn't, so no, I would be, you know, upset, or maybe other people would be getting the manager in that instance. Mm. So really, you're being dishonest if you say please.
because that's actually a lie.
Yeah.
So what you should say is, give me a corona.
Yeah.
But you never would, because what we've evolved a sort of way of saying, it might be hypocritical, but it's a way of letting that person know, I might be in a position of authority over you as the customer, and you being the person who's meant to serve the customers, but I don't mean to come across that way, and I hope that you can forgive me. That's how I feel when I say please anyway.
Well, I think it would be better if you would say, if you give me a bottle of Corona, I will give you £3.25.
Yeah, but nobody speaks like that, you see. So that might be a sort of more honest way, but you'd more likely to make the bar person afraid if you spoke in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
So it still seems to me that your choice, really, you don't like people kind of flowering up their language.
No. I haven't nailed what I'm talking about yet.
You don't like people behaving with kind of courtesy and respect. Am I getting this right?
No, not at all. You're getting it absolutely wrong. But that passive aggression where, I could really do with this right now.
Okay, so your problem is there that they haven't asked for it directly. They've just mentioned...
Or, it'd be really nice if you said something nice right now.
Really? Has someone said that to you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now I'm on your side.
Yeah.
So what your ex-partner would turn to you and say, it'd be nice if you paid me a compliment right now. And then you'd have to come up with a compliment.
Well, no, I wouldn't.
You'd refuse.
Well, I would say, really did not work out this relationship. No, she would say, you could say something nice right now, or and I'd be like, well, you just asked me to. It makes whatever I say invalid.
I suppose what she was feeling is that if there's anything that you have in your head that's nice, now would be the time to say it rather than some other time.
Yeah, well, there's the problem.
You didn't have nice things in your head.
I never do. I don't shop for them. Don't keep them in the house.
I see.
They just take up room. They go off.
Yeah.
Put nice things in my head. They don't get used.
Mm-hmm.
They're used by date. She would... I really sound like an arsehole, don't I? Look, if my...
This is great, by the way.
If my family had a...
Going exactly to plan.
If I had a motto on the family crest, it would be, we don't do requests.
I see.
We don't like being...
Told what to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That comes across as being told what to do. If I feel like I'm being manipulated into doing something that I don't want to do, then I just bail up. I mean, I'm aware this is not a healthy way to be, but that's just how I...
It's not, but it could be useful for me. please don't litter this podcast with increasingly vicious, homophobic and racist comments. I would not enjoy that, and it is forbidden.
Okay. It kind of ties into the whole corporate speak and branding speak.
Yeah.
That is very widespread now, where organisations like... It's the verbal equivalent of branding for organisations. Where an organisation... They put up a billboard, and their Shell or someone like that, and they put up a billboard with lots of leaves and flowers and shit, and you're like, they're really green.
Yeah.
In the same way that they use language on their billboards, like Lloyd's do these things like, giving you the money you need to do the things that make you feel great, or some shit like that. That's not really manipulative, though. It's just bullshit. Making you feel something about an organisation that it... doesn't deserve to have felt about it is a lie. It is manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that reply is actually relevant to the question.
Okay. Good for you. Good on you.
Can we finish this one now?
No. I haven't got enough examples. Because if we leave it here, I feel as though...
Yeah, it's half-baked, isn't it?
Well, also you'll come across... Because I've done my best to try and paint this as you being an awful person.
Yeah.
But you haven't refuted it.
No.
I suppose because the power of my argument is so strong that...
The lack of forethought I put into mine is the problem here.
Whereas I've been working on how to make you out to be a prick all week.
Yeah. I've been working on that for 44 years.
But I think passive aggression, generally, is... It's because people don't feel comfortable with actual aggression. They feel as though...
Yes.
Or confrontation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you, by finding it so terrible and bemoaning, why can't people be more direct? Do you feel like you're quite at home with confrontation, or at least being direct about what you want or how you feel? Because it may be that you're just not allowing other people that.
No, I'm pretty direct. I'm pretty direct, but I'm not comfortable with conflict.
Right.
I don't like conflict. I hate it.
Mm-hmm. So but what you're saying is if someone's doing something to bother you, what you do is you sit them down, you make them a nice cup of coffee, and you talk it out like men.
Oh, you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could just bottle it up.
Ah, so that's,
don't say anything.
So that's your solution, is that rather than letting these little bits of resentment bleed out in sort of passive-aggressive and manipulative speech patterns, what you feel like is you should sort of just swallow it down, never address any of it, and then hope that you don't get a tumour somewhere down the line.
Yes.
I'm trying to help you here, Nick. Yeah. I'm giving you options for how to get out of this hole that you dug for yourself about.
I am really regretting putting this on the list now. It felt like it was going to be easy.
And appearing on the podcast, even.
Yeah.
Because this is your first one.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. All of the branding and marketing, so much of it's just so hollow and meaningless and is not intended to make anything clearer. If anything, it's designed to obfuscate. It's designed to pull the wool over our eyes and make us, to not show us the reality of things, to not show us the reality of what governments or corporations are doing. And I'm not a politically, if anything, I'm politically apathetic, primarily as a reaction to this sort of thing where you go, oh my God, if I want to know the truth, you just have to dig so hard to find the truth. It has to be an ongoing pursuit. And
seems like a lot of hard work for something that's probably going to make you quite miserable.
Yes, yeah. I'd rather stay
blissfully ignorant
and bubbly. But I think the through line for me is the mistruth or the lack of clarity.
Mm-hmm. So would you prefer that we all lived in a world where we were relentlessly confronted with the truth at all times?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It would be a very different world, I know.
Because it seems like, I mean, you don't like people being kind of polite, so you'd like people
Being polite. But clearly, I don't like aggression.
Have you seen the film The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais?
No.
Well, that's a film in which they live in a world where no one can lie, and this is an excuse for Ricky Gervais to write a whole bunch of characters that just relentlessly slay the most critical and kind of bleak assessment at all times, because rather than saying, hello, good morning, they say, hello, you're looking paunchy today. Is that the world that you'd like to live in?
Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't bother making those comments.
So, well, actually, the world that you want to live in is one where people are quiet.
Yeah.
Just walk around in complete silence.
Just shut up.
Okay.
You know, isn't it tragic that in this day and age, the way science has advanced so much, and there are so many in the world who still live as dickheads? Isn't that tragic? And they just talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's what I would like, please.
Okay. I feel like we should move on to something that you love in order to kind of buoy your spirits, because I feel like you're getting quite misanthropic. You need to be reminded that there is light in the world.
Okay.
So, things that you love, personal space.
Well, that ties in very well with that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love personal space. And I think loving personal space stems partly from growing up in Australia and having way more personal space. And it's just something that I notice over here, that just as how often am I in a room where I can actually stretch my arms out either side of me, airplane style? Not that that's what's driving my personal space.
You've got sore arms.
Yeah, well, this is probably my love of personal space. It probably stems from living in London, where there's very little physical personal space, and mentally as well. It's a very crowded environment. There's a lot of things vying for your attention all the time, and it just builds up to this, you know, high fever pitch over a number of years.
Yeah.
I first realised how much I love personal space when I'm living in a flat by myself right now. And about 3 years ago, I shared a flat with a guy, and he was a bit odd and was kind of there all the time. Every day you came home, he was there, and he was a bit odd.
And okay, in what way?
Well, so you know how if you're a well-adjusted person, you can maintain eye contact?
Yeah.
Right. But you also know when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I moved into the flat I'm in now, I left and the guys came around with the van and we loaded it up and we took all the stuff to the flat and then we loaded it in and then I closed the door behind them and locked it and I was there in the flat by myself and I did one of those weird, slightly hysterical laughs that you see people in movies do.
Okay.
It's almost bordering on a cry.
Right. You're like,
and it's just, oh my God, the feeling of relief was so intense.
Yeah.
And I was standing in the middle of this flat with, you know, there's crap everywhere. You've just moved in. Nothing's unpacked. All this work to do. And all I could think was just like, oh my God, I think this is the best I felt in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Getting away from that. So yeah, personal space is important to me, Ollie.
It's because you want to lounge about in your pants. It's quite difficult to do that when there's someone else around.
Well, this is the thing. So people, because I worked at home for quite a long time. I was working from home, living from home too, actually. Yeah, doing some of my best living from home. But I was working from home, and you tell people that, and they always say, like, oh, do you get out of your pyjamas, or do you get out of your dressing gown? I was like, yeah, absolutely. I get up, I get dressed, and hang out at home. There's no need to drop your standards just because you're by yourself.
Mm. I would, though, if it was my... I mean, I live alone, and I... do a lot of my best work in the nude.
Oh.
I just want people to picture that. Like next time you get a gig email from me or a witty Facebook status update or whatever, chances are I've been nude.
Yep.
When doing that.
Yep. Possibly tumescent.
Yeah, and I feel like that's sort of the I need to be. It's a shame I can't be nude on stage because I'm a lot more. Open.
It'd be funnier.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot funnier.
Get an initial laugh.
Yeah.
At least, yeah.
And then, yeah, depends what you do with it. Yeah. I'm just thinking ahead to all the other stuff I've got lined up and thinking, I am going to come across as the most miserable man on this podcast. And I am.
And I'm really entertained by it.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm the one who gets labelled as the super miserable guy. And I don't feel like I really want to inhabit that role, but it's how I come across an awful lot, and now it's you.
Yeah.
Mm.
You're good cop.
Yeah, I'm good cop. Finally. My time has come. Just needed to invite Nick Ellery over.
Yep.
That's all I ever need to do.
Yeah.
Just make sure that you're there to juxtapose with me, and then everything will go a lot better.
Yeah.
For me. So your first two choices, essentially, the one was love and one was hate, but basically we're coming down to the fact that you hate other people.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should...
This is almost a family thing, though, which we joke about. When my brother saw There Will Be Blood, and I called him afterwards and I said, oh, what did you think? And he goes... Mate, that's he started laughing and said, that scene where, and I said, what, I don't really like people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both laughing like, I love that. That's awesome.
Mm.
Yeah, we like that character, Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood. Mm. You know, quite solitary, misanthropic, and probably quite damaged and lonely, but you know. What else is on the list?
I feel like every time you say something, what I'm going to do is just leave a big space around it because that makes it seem even more
worse than it is. Yeah.
Because if I just picked it up, it would be fine. But giving myself room to edit kind of big pauses around everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it's just one man's descent into...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big pause, slight sound of weeping in the background.
Yeah. Usually usually what I would do on this show is try and kind of do a hate, a love. Essentially, your first two were both were two. Essentially, they were two hates.
Yes.
So I'm going to pick a love one so we can get onto a more positive angle here. And on your love list, I see you've written Pretty Ladies.
Pretty Ladies.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a lot of heterosexual men would like Pretty Ladies. Is there something particular in your appreciation for Pretty Ladies that's worthy of comment?
Oh, they're pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
When you sent me through, when you said three things that I love, and I was thinking about it going, oh my God, what do I love, you know? Because obviously I spent a lot of time thinking about really negative, bleak stuff, which might need to be addressed. But
I'm thinking, what do I
really love? I got to love stuff because otherwise I wouldn't do anything, would I? And I was looking at it going, oh... And then I thought, let's face it, you know, I'm single at the moment, but I've had relationships and really, you know, I go out and I try and spend time with members of the opposite sex that I'm attracted to. And that really motivates me a lot when I'm, you know, in a relationship or interested in somebody. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, well, let's be honest about it. Pretty ladies is a particularly nice / inflammatory way of phrasing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a slight trolling there. I could have said, you know, women that I am attracted to.
Yeah.
That is essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that's an entirely honest thing to put on the list of things that I love, because spending time around women that I'm attracted to, and there's the possibility of things happening. I guess we're talking primarily in a courtship scenario here, rather than just, oh, I went to this bar and it was full of pretty ladies. It was awesome. obviously, yeah, I like attractive women.
And you don't like unattractive women.
I knew you were going to take it there. And no, I don't.
You think that they should try harder?
No, I don't have that button pushed by women that I'm not attracted to.
Mm-hmm. So why do they even show up?
No, they can show up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice of you.
Yeah, you know, that's cool. That's all right, you know. But
I'm really enjoying watching you squirm to try and justify.
Yeah.
Because you could come across misogynistic somehow in your appreciation of pretty ladies.
Well,
I don't know if anyone's ever mentioned this to you, but they don't exist solely to arouse you. They have rights and feelings.
I didn't say they aroused me.
Pretty ladies do not arouse you, is your next statement.
You know, the arousement thing is all well and good in the right place and time.
Okay.
All I'm saying is that this is a very basic thing as a human being, that we're driven to seek the company of members of the opposite sex that we find attractive.
Mm-hmm.
We're hardwired to do that. So I was just acknowledging that.
Yeah.
That yes.
It's the law of the jungle.
This has been a motivating factor.
Survival of the fittest out there. So I mean, when
you're taking a very Aryan.
Aryan? No, I mean, I'm just saying that by your admission, when a bunch of rowdy lads come across a pretty lady and kind of go, come on, that's kind of just the fundamental kind of, the testosterone is going there. There's a sort of evolutionary basis for wanting to spread the seed, and it's perfectly understandable.
That probably is the basis of that behaviour.
The rules of the jungle.
That would be the basis of that behaviour, but that doesn't mean they're not being dicks.
Mm.
Just means that they handle those impulses with less panache than me.
Okay. By panache, you mean remaining quiet and...
Just raising an eyebrow.
Raising an eyebrow.
Yeah.
Ding dong.
That's it.
Oh, dear. Okay, so the next choice that we're going to go on to is on your love list. Now, this was a contentious one because you've got a choice that you've ended up with, but what you originally had in there was big, big wanks.
Yes, which I put in there purely to make you laugh.
You succeeded in doing that. But the choice we've ended up with is American Water, an album by a band named...
The Silver Jews.
Do you prefer listening to American Water by the Silver Jews more than engaging in a big, big wank? Because it's replaced it on your list.
The big, big wank was never intended as a serious item on the list. It was because I gave you a list of three fairly verbose things that I hate, and then the contrast between that and the statement, big, big wanks, was meant to leave... to a humorous reaction, which I think it did.
I'm not denying that it led to a humorous reaction, but what I want to clarify is whether or not you do love big, big wanks, or whether you've reconsidered.
I don't know what you mean by big, big wanks.
The American Water album by the Silver Jews.
Yes.
What is it about? Well, we'll listen to it in a second, but yes. What's introduced us to this idea? I don't think many... It's not that mainstream, is it? Not many people might have heard of this. What sort of music is it?
It is American indie rock, alt country.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to apply labels to it, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it down because I thought, what do I really love? And I do love that album. It's the last album. It's the album that I've bought in the last 10 years or so that has become one of my all-time favorites, which doesn't happen very often anymore. And when I found it, I was like, oh my God, this is so great. Why didn't I have it earlier?
Mm-hmm.
And it stuck with me, and I still really love it.
Does it fit with the rest of the music that you like? Generally speaking, you
like
a lot of that.
Pretty much so, yeah.
You like Neutral Milk Hotel?
I do like Neutral Milk Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I like them very much. I'm going to see them in May.
Okay, because that's what the first thing that kind of jumped... They're the alt band of that type that I've heard of. Mm. And I thought, if he likes this, he probably likes... Neutral Milk Hotel.
There's one, In an Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel is fantastic. The earlier album, On Avery Island, I did not care for so much.
Okay.
It was a bit clumsier. Although, you know, the genre of music itself is not noted for its musical deftness. It is a little bit ramshackle, a little bit lo-fi.
Yeah. And do you feel like that lo-fi aesthetic, you feel like you're getting something a bit more authentic, or... Is it just the aesthetic of it that you enjoy?
It is. No, it's not even the aesthetic. I like bands that it sounds like if they played the same track five times in a row, it would sound different five times.
Okay, not very polished and tight and...
Yeah, there's a bit of leeway there. There's a bit of looseness there,
mm-hmm.
for it to have a different feel each time rather than the super proficient studio musician vibe.
Okay. It sounds like what you're saying is you like bad musicians. It's just we'll play it in the background. We'll have a listen. I don't want you to describe why it is what it is that you like about this, this noise. So Lou Reed starts the album.
Well, it's David Berman is the singer.
Mm-hmm.
See, fantastic opening line.
Okay, what is that opening line for people that didn't get it?
In 1985, I was hospitalised for approaching perfection.
And what is it about that line that he thinks fantastic? I listen to that line and go, what do you mean by that?
It's just very evocative
of
something.
Mm-hmm. See, this is what this kind of music might be criticised for. This is why I ask: is that maybe it says quite cool sounding, retro sounding, authentic sounding things, poetic sounding things. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's
poetry definitely features David Berman, the lyricist and singer, is a poet,
mm-hmm.
and has published books of poetry. And the It's hard to talk about it without sounding wanky and to sound as if you're covering up the failings of it. But there are combinations of words that evoke feelings or images, and over an entire, they tend to be quite consistent across the songs, so that each one feels like a self-contained reality about something, but without having to literally lay it out.
Well, what he just said just there.
What was that?
What he just said, the singer guy, Lou Reed, he just said.
David Berman.
Lou Reed just said, I know something along the lines of, a lot of what I know I got from Men's Room Walls.
Oh, I know.
And that sounds like what he's engaging in is. Cottaging.
Going to the toilet.
No, cottaging. You know, he's getting men's numbers off bathroom walls and engaging in it.
No, sorry, the majority of things written on bathroom walls is just graffiti, not men's numbers. He could just be in there having a poo.
And soliciting reading some
good,
random...
Reading some good graffiti.
Random men for oral copulation.
Well, if you want to take that from it, then that's absolutely all right.
Well, I think it's staring you right in the face. It's basically an anthem for, you know, random acts of homosexual
love. The song is called Random Rules.
Exactly.
So, I guess it could be, yeah.
You're saying, and that's why you like it.
What type of sex do you like? I like random sex, because random rules.
Yeah.
That could be it.
Okay, well, we're going to turn this off. Now, all jokes aside, it's very pleasant. I like to make out that it's terrible because it makes you feel uncomfortable. When you were in a band yourself, which you were,
yes.
Is this the sort of music that you were playing?
I would have liked to have played this sort of music, yeah, and it wasn't a million miles from it.
And you were the guitarist.
But the influences of the band, the band that I was in, my own band, was Democracy, so the music that we made was the product of everyone's influences. And so the drummer...
For a moment there, I thought that you were saying your band's name was Democracy.
Oh.
Which would have been awful. What was the band's name?
Well, the band's name was actually taken from a line in a song on this album.
Oh, great.
It's called
about the bathroom stalls.
No, it's called Grass Rabbits.
Okay.
Because there's a line in this in one of the later songs that says that goes, "All right, could have been anyone. Grass rabbits, grass rabbits, grass rabbits, grass rabbits, grass." Which I think there's something in that for everyone.
It's a good message to take
home.
Yeah. It could have been anyone.
Yeah. But all the members of the band. This is one of the few albums that we all liked. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of similar influences, but this is one that we got it around about the same time and went, wow, how great is this album?
Does the use of the word Jews in the band name not make you slightly uncomfortable?
No, not at all.
Were they all Jewish in this band?
No, David Berman was.
Hmm.
And he's the main...
So it should really be called Silver One Jew. Silver Jew.
Well, he was dark-haired as well.
Hypocritical, this music.
I know.
And anti-Semitic.
Hypocritical and anti-Semitic. That's what I look for in a band.
Yeah.
It's not on Spotify, which is annoying.
No, I looked for it.
I listen to most things on Spotify now. So,
does that make you feel better about this band that they're not on Spotify? I think they're not even on Spotify, guys.
No, it just sort of annoys me because I can't listen to them as often as I'd like. In this day and age, the kudos of not being on a particular label, it's not really there anymore, is it? It's not like 15 years ago it was, I had to really seek out this track. Mm. Nowadays, if you've got to seek out a track, it's like, well, that's just silly.
Yeah.
Because there's music everywhere.
I think it's when Apple bought the Beatles back catalogue. That was the moment where it all ended.
Have they done that?
Mm-hmm. That was a big... I remember seeing there's a big advert where it was that white background that they like for all their adverts, and it had the picture of the Beatles, and it said now available on iTunes.
Oh.
And it was about it was like corporate America going, look what we've got now.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember all that 1960s countercultural?
Yep.
Nope. Now we have it, we own it all. Yes. We'll sell it to you now, you'll be going on our app, and you'll be downloading it all from us.
Yeah.
And that was the moment where I knew that everything had ended and everything had failed. There was no hope.
I didn't think a Beatles fan as intense a Beatles fan as yourself,
I'm not. I'm...
would also have Skrillex on his iTunes.
Should we listen to a bit of Skrillex?
I've never listened to Skrillex.
Oh, this is going to be an education. So what are you thinking? This is pretty good. You can get on with this.
Not a big fan of pinched harmonics.
There's the decks. This is what the silver juice is missing.
Mm.
It's like that repeat. Mm. You know what I mean? It's very... There it is again. It's very... It makes you feel excited. There's the drop.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Do you want to reconsider your choice now that you've heard that?
Is it all like that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then yeah. I think that's...
You're going to change your musical tastes?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad I could help you. Because, no, I mean, you know, that was not doing you any good.
I now love Skrillex. After listening to that Skrillex, I am pumped.
Nick, what's your final choice?
Oh, it's another light-hearted little tag. It's the elevation of uninformed opinion in the modern world.
Okay. I can feel quite a lot of applications for this. So what specifically?
So the printing of people's Twitter content comments on movie posters.
Mm-hmm.
The use of Twitter comments and forum comments as content in news articles.
Yeah.
To say that people have said this about that, or...
One tweeter said this.
Yeah.
And now it's news.
Yeah. But even the fact that... Because people can leave so many comments nowadays, and user feedback, or what's the TV version of user feedback? User-generated content.
Mm.
It's this lazy way of just getting content for nothing.
Yeah.
And people feel like, oh, my opinion matters.
And people will always have stupid things to comment about, so you'll always have a sort of on-tap source of...
So when it comes to TV and things, and TV and newspapers, I tend to want... to hear what somebody who's knows about the subject
An
thinks.
Expert, yeah.
I'm not talking about situations where, you know, they're making some change to a town centre and they ask the residents what they think. Of course, that is a valid thing to ask.
Mm.
But generally speaking, actually, you know what? Even the number of opinion pieces you get in the newspaper. So, for instance, The Independent now has Janet Street Porter writing an article. And Janet Street Porter writes okay.
Are you saying that she has uninformed opinions?
She has opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And she's employed purely because of the opinions and because... this is getting off topic, but...
She's a sort of rent-a-gob, isn't she?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, you're probably not going to agree with her. Better read her this week.
Another one is Katie Hopkins. Have you come across Katie Hopkins?
Oh, she's the...
Ex-apprentice woman.
She's the horrible...
Very posh.
Elitist.
Yeah. So she's the one that went on GMTV to say that she won't let her children play with other children if they have names such as, like, Tyler and Leroy and whatever.
Right.
Or Chelsea, or, you know, any kind of name that isn't...
What are the acceptable names? Did she say which names she'd prefer?
I don't know, but I'm assuming she means names that she recognises, not the kind of new wave of...
What, you mean people she already knows?
No, I mean, if someone... It's different. If someone says, hey, my name's Santa Cruz, then it would be different if they said their name was Daniel. I think that's what she...
Okay.
Is. So, I mean, Katie Hopkins is a perfect example of this, that she... Basically, she did that. There was a lot of YouTube hits. A lot of people had to chime in to say how disgraceful it was.
A lot of clicks.
A lot of views. And she now does it fairly regularly. They just wheel her out to say a kind of abhorrently... elitist things.
Yep.
Solely because they know that it will roll people up and get them all pissed off.
Generate traffic.
She's got an entire career over Twitter just saying kind of quite hateful things.
Right. And so people say terrible things back to her.
Mm-hmm.
And feel like they've
righted a wrong somehow in the world. Yeah. And every time I see that, I just inform people that what they're doing is engaging with a fictional character.
Yeah.
You might as well scream that Joffrey Baratheon at Game of Thrones is unacceptable, you know, while you're watching that on your TV. It's just a kind of completely constructed hate figure.
Yeah, you had to get a Game of Thrones reference in, didn't you?
I absolutely did. It's a new season, HBO, coming out every Sunday night. It often seems as though people have made a basic error in, okay, yes, we reached a point where free speech is an ideal, a thing that we champion, and too right.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that every opinion is worth hearing. Every opinion can and should be voiced and be able to, but it doesn't mean that every opinion has equal relevance.
Yeah. And it's also used, you know, if the Guardian reports on something, they're going to use the quotes from people that support what they believe.
Mm.
And if the Daily Mail does, they'll do the same as well.
And that's what's so handy about Twitter, is that you can basically any idiotic opinion can be justified. If what you're doing is throwing to a random person on Twitter, you can find anyone saying anything and go, look, this is what Twitter is saying.
Yes.
But actually, you've just got one idiot who believes that, you know, black people are turning our British geese gay or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can print that as a story in the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
No problem.
So you're in agreement?
I mean, I'm not talking you out of this one.
Yeah.
Finally, you're making some sense.
Yeah. The thing is, things change. The world changes, and it's easy to elevate TV from a particular era as being better than the TV now, or the media of a particular era to be better than it is now. And it's not always the case, is it? You know, it's easy for me to say, to pick at things like user-generated content, but there is still good, you know, television and news and media.
For example, if I'm looking to buy a new product, if I'm saying, hey, you know, what juices are there out there on the market, I'm probably more likely to seek out user-generated reviews from other people who are just in the same position as me. I want the sort of everyday man on the street's reaction. I got it out of the box, it fell apart. Oh, I couldn't work out how to put the pieces together, because I think that will probably be quite similar to my reaction to it.
Yeah.
And any little bits that you're not going to get the truth from any manufacturer or any middleman selling it onto you, such as Amazon. So in that case, it's pretty good. But if it's a news story where there's professional journalists involved in reporting it, I'd much rather hear what they have to say.
Yes. Yes. Right. So we agree.
I can change if you like. Yeah. I think experts.
Okay, I'll change it then to I believe that there should be more.
Should be more
user-generated,
uninformed opinion.
Uninformed user-generated content. Because it can sound quite elitist saying that, you know, like, oh, instead I don't want to hear what people think, I want to hear what experts think.
I don't think that's elitist. I think it depends what sort of information you want. It makes sense that if you want to hear about particle physics, you want to hear it from someone who's actually studied particle physics.
There's a lot of opinions out there. And
an awful lot of ways to receive them.
Yes.
At all times of the day.
People are just way more... No, they're probably not... I think they are more ready to share their opinions now, probably because it's primarily via the internet and there's no...
filter.
Well, there's no...
consequence.
Consequence, that's what I'm looking for.
Mm.
So they can just go, well, I think it's fucking loaded shit. And there are very few people that would actually do that in real life. An interesting thing happened about 8 years ago. And I went back to Australia and I met my brother Ken for the first time in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd moved over here, he lives in North Queensland, and we just hadn't met up at all. And Ken lives out in the country in Australia,
okay.
You know.
He's a hick.
Well, we're all from the same place. He likes personal space and a lack of opinions around him. That's why he's gone to North Queensland.
Yeah.
But my reputation in the family, I think, is unsurprisingly being fairly liberal, left-leaning, bit of a bleeding heart. And Ken's is being, you know, fairly reactionary and not right-wing.
Would you like to call him a bigot?
It would be unsurprising if he was bigoted at that time, because I hadn't seen him in 10 years. And so we met up with each other and we spent a lot of time together. We were very wary around each other at first.
Okay.
Like, because I'm thinking, oh geez, Ken's going to drop some terrible statements, and Ken was thinking, oh geez, Nick's going to be
wishy-washy and...
Yeah, or just be an annoying judgmental, lefty, whatever.
Mm.
And after a day or two, we both relaxed because we talked a lot and there was nothing... We had some difference of opinion,
mm-hmm.
but there was nothing that Ken said that he wouldn't back up with rational discussion
mm-hmm.
or argument, and it all came from a good place. There was no malice. Anything that he believed for a reason, and he could talk about it, and so there was nothing reactionary or knee-jerk about it.
Yeah, sure.
So when he would say, I don't believe in this because of this, and you drill down into that subject, you realise, well, it's what he believes, and he believes for the right reasons, because he thinks it's good for, you know, people generally or
yeah, it's whatever. Not just a self-involved, yeah. emotional, well, this doesn't seem right to me. Ugh.
Well, that's where I felt like on the back foot, because he could probably argue his stuff more than I could,
mm-hmm.
because I tend to surround myself with like-minded individuals.
Sure.
You know, we're all left-leaning, we all believe this is good or that is good or that is bad. And you just sort of your way along. And so my point is that...
Is that the sound of a middle-class liberal?
Yeah.
No misogyny.
I don't care for misogyny. Misogyny is my third child. The thing with... if you can't back up your opinion with anything other than, well, that's just what I think. Just saying.
That does seem to be a kind of a full stop for some people. Yeah. Well, thanks, Nick, for being on the show. How do you feel?
I'm a bit flat.
It's been an entirely dispiriting experience.
Yeah, I feel like I've been attacked, you know? Attacked and tried to have my words twisted into statements that I don't believe.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of that. And then you've got the edit to come.
Yes. So I'm going to be firefighting from now on, really.
Yeah.
I need to get my PR people onto it to
get your agent
to
ready.
To Bettersworth my reputation.
To put out a few fires, yeah. But thanks for making the trip to Mitcham. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to episode 8. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can catch Nick Ellery up in Edinburgh if you're going up there from the 31st of July to the 24th of August at 10:30 in the evening. The show lasts an hour and is at the Free Sisters venue, which is part of the Laughing Horse programme, so you won't even have to pay to see the show. That is with Nick Ellery and Ben Clover, another terrific comedian, and is advertised in the programme as a true Edinburgh treat for discerning comedy fans and outright idiots alike, so no excuses. As always, if you wish to register your enjoyment of the show, please do go onto the iTunes page and leave a little review or a little rating. That would really help. Or just tell a friend to check out the show. But for now, I hope to see you again for episode 9. And until then, good
night! Well, it's not about whether I'm okay with it, it's whether the public at large are okay with it.
You're saying that the public's not ready for your pubic hair?
I think most of the public is not ready for my pubic hair. Like just talking loudly in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
In some restaurants that would be entirely acceptable and regular.
Yeah.
And
like in a restaurant for deaf people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mainly moaning.
Yeah.
Vowels.
Yeah.
I don't know. Perhaps suddenly.
Would you like to say anything else, Ollie?
Well, luckily I have the edit, so.
Yeah.